Welcome to episode 15 of the Walk and Talk podcast. I'm Greg Johnson, and today is Monday, May 11th, 2020. In this episode, the topic is building a simple website, and I'm not going to discuss the step-by-step specifics of that, but I want to talk about the planning and the initial stages of thinking through how you want to launch your website and what purpose it's going to serve. So there are really a few areas, and I'll just cover the outline here at the beginning, a few areas to consider. And the first will be naming your website, finding a good name for it. The second will be what kind of design interface do you want to use? And do you want something that's drag and drop or that involves a little more complexity in how the site is designed and managed? And then the third, which is sort of dependent on the second, is where do you want to have your website hosted? And then finally, I guess, would be considerations about cost. So let's begin with the topic of naming your website. With regard to the website name, if you're going to have one website, then it makes sense to have that name be the name by which you are most predominantly recognized for your business or the work you do. So if you're an author, you would probably want the website name to be yourname.com or some variation of that, whatever's available. If you're a musician, you might want yourname.com, or if you're with a band, maybe the band would have a website that is thebandsname.com. But you want some website name that's going to be short and easy to spell and easy to remember and reinforced by existing branding and identification that's out there. But what I would recommend is, instead of considering having just one website, would be to go ahead and have several. And that's not as complicated or expensive as you might imagine. In the late 1900s, 1980s, 1990s, there was something called a phone book. And if you were to get an advertisement in the phone book, in what were called yellow pages, it would be an alphabetical listing of local businesses by category. If you were going to get an advertisement in the yellow pages, you might get two or three ads because you weren't sure if people were going to find you under one topic or another. If you're a musician, maybe you'd want to be under entertainment and music and live performers or something like that. Businesses would typically list under several headings. Well, the same is true for having a website or several websites. You'll certainly want to have one that is yourname.com, probably regardless of who you are or what you do. It's nice to have a presence on the web. Need not be complicated, just a simple site, but at least a hub from which people can find the other things that you do. And you'll also want to have a website for your business, whatever that might be, because when people are searching for your business name, you want that to be easily found, and it will be easily found if the website address is yourbusinessname.com or some variation of that. But what about people who don't know your name and they don't know your business name and all they know is they're looking for a carpenter? They're not going to do a search for your name because they don't know you, and they're not going to search for your business name. They're probably going to search for carpenter in Iowa City. So Iowa City woodworkers or Iowa City carpenters. For that reason, you also would want to have a website that would be Iowa City Carpenter, or Iowa City Carpenters, or whatever variation of that is available. And that's probably not the name you're going to print on your business card or register your business under at the bank or whatever, but you want to have a website with that name because that's what people might be searching on and you want them to find you. So you could have a simple one-page website. You know, a lot of people are just using the internet like they used to use the old phone book. They just want to do a search, find a business, tap on a phone number, and make a phone call. They don't want to read, you know, 100 pages or look through a complex portfolio in many cases. Sometimes they do, but not always. So I've tested this theory out, created some websites that are basically just whatever the search term might be and then put .com on the end, and created a simple, you know, 2 or 3 page website. And that really works. It's inexpensive. It's simple to create. It's a static site, basically. You're not changing a lot of the content. So you just pay your annual hosting, which could be, you know, say less than $60 a year, depending on where you get it hosted. And you'll need to see what name is available when you pick a host and you go to their website. They will have a box that you can type in the website name that you'd like to have. And you'll press search and see if it's available. And if it is, you can choose that. It might be available with a different extension than .com. And I would encourage you to keep searching until you find a name that's available with the .com. And then you pick that domain or those domains for the websites you want. Now, something you might not consider when searching for a website name is that just because it's available, you may be unknowingly choosing a website name that's similar to an existing website out there. Maybe there's an existing business with a similar name. And what can happen is you could end up buying some domain name. The cost for that should be sort of $15 to $30 a year to own that. You may end up getting the cost of it covered and included in your hosting plan. But you might end up buying this domain name, getting a website address, setting up a website, and then a month or 2 months or 6 months later, somebody is doing a trademark search to protect their own trademark. This is commonly done. Could be every 6 months, could be once a year, but people will go out and make sure if they have trademarked a business name in a specific area of service, they'll make sure that nobody else is starting to use that name. Because if they allow that and don't do something about it, and suddenly there are 5 people using their trademarked name, they're going to have a busy time trying to get everybody to cease and desist, and they'll have a lot of legal fees. And also, if the name becomes diluted enough and they haven't done their due diligence, it could be argued that there's no longer validity in that trademark. It's sort of like squatter's rights. After a period of time, it becomes impractical, and there's so much content out on the web that legally they would have a right to try to protect their trademark, but the reality of it is it just might not be doable. But anyway, depending on how serious you are about your business, you may want to pay a few $100s or more to have a trademark search done and make sure nobody else is using your business name that you want to use in some other business in a related field. And that's how trademarks work. You could have a business called Wendy's right next to a restaurant that's called Wendy's. And as long as you're not a restaurant, if you're Wendy's muffler shop, you might not get into trouble. Although maybe the business next door would argue that that creates some brand confusion. So you might be asked to stop doing business or change your name, but it's not as clear cut of a case, particularly if you're 2 blocks away. There's not much confusion, and your sign says Wendy's Muffler Shop. But certainly, if you are setting up a business called Wendy's and it's a restaurant, regardless of where you are, you're probably going to hear from Wendy's and be asked to change your business name. So you want to avoid getting into that problem down the road if you're going to invest a lot of time in building up a website and building a following and getting your brand out there. And one way to do that is to use sort of generic terms that are difficult to trademark. Chicago area website designer.com or something. It's unlikely somebody would have trademarked those generic terms. But anyway, it's just something to be aware of. And it's another reason why you may want to have multiple points of presence on the web in case something were to come up and one of your online properties were to be infringing on copyright somewhere. At least you'd have other sources of ways that people could find you on the web and be familiar with your content. Okay, so that's a little bit about naming. And you do want to think that through. You want to also have in mind some variations of your business name or website name that will fit nicely as a username on, let's say, Twitter. Because your username on Twitter cannot be ChicagoAreaWebsiteDeveloper.com. You can't have a long Twitter username. It has to be a limited number of characters. And that will be the same for if you set up a Gmail address or a YouTube channel or a page on Facebook and you want the address to be facebook.com/ and fill in the name, even if that can be longer. You really don't want to get into having lengthy usernames and lengthy web addresses. It's nice for it to be short and concise and consistent across platforms, so it begins to reinforce whatever this brand name is that you want to use. And you want to have that in mind a little bit when you're picking your website. If possible, if your website name can be short, then you could use that as your username elsewhere, assuming it's available. Something else to mention about website names is that whenever possible, you want to avoid using hyphenation. You want to avoid using the number 2 instead of spelling out T-O. You want to avoid using the number 4 instead of spelling out F-O-R. Avoid using, you know, like non-correct spellings like biker boys with a Z on the end or something. It should be phonetically easy to remember and to spell, and the person trying to find the website shouldn't have to type in and remember some unusual spelling. Before you choose a website hosting company, you'll want to have some idea of how you plan to be designing the website in the initial setup and in the future. How do you want to make modifications to the website? So there are basically two methods that are common for designing websites. One method is available through a company called Wix. Another is Weebly. Sometimes these design services are available within a service package from a larger hosting company. But Wix and Weebly are examples of visual website editing. So you have a canvas in front of you, and you're able to drag and drop images. And you're basically designing the site and interacting with the site as it appears to the site visitors. So you're not like in an editing mode where you have to kind of imagine what it's going to look like and then you push publish and then you look at the published outcome. You're editing that site and seeing what it's looking like. Those services many people find are very easy to use to set up sites quickly and to ensure that the sites will look good on mobile devices as well as laptops and desktops. What I've found is that while those sites can be easy to use, they're sometimes limited in the complexity of a site design for what you can offer in terms of lots of content, and also the tools that you use with those services are typically in a column on the right or a column on the left or some floating tool component. And if you're on a small laptop computer or even a, you know, 15-inch laptop computer, you might find that the tools cover up your website. In other words, you really want to have like a probably a 28-inch monitor or something like that so you can really see all the tools on the left or right and then get a full look at your website without having it overlapping and crunched in on the screen. And you'll want to also see how your website is going to look on a larger display for people that might be visiting with that kind of visual to their computer. The other approach to designing a website is to use what's called a content management system. You may have heard of WordPress, and a system like WordPress lets you create basic web pages and create posts. If you're really focused on specifically your written content and photos and images that you're putting on the website, and you're not too concerned about specifically how the content lays out on the page, then WordPress may be a good choice for you because it does allow very quick and easy access, even from a mobile device like a smartphone, to get in there and create a new post or update a page, because the content is designed to be viewed and even edited from multiple platforms. So that's a plus with a service like WordPress. And there are increasingly becoming available some themes, or what are sometimes called frameworks, that allow you to have pretty much a virtual, accurate visual editing experience. So you're editing the website and seeing at the same time, seeing that site as a website visitor would see it from multiple views, desktop, tablet, or smartphone. An example of that would be the Divi website theme and builder from Elegant Themes is the name of the company that supports that. When you choose an advanced theme like Divi from a company that's been around for many years, you're basically hiring a team of web developers to get you through the first phase of designing the framework that the website's going to be built on. So you're not starting from scratch and trying to design your own theme or using a free, basic, simple theme. So that's an advantage. You'll find that there are thousands of themes available for WordPress, but you want a theme that's going to be around for a while, that's going to be compatible, that's going to be well supported, for which you can submit tech questions and get answers from people who are developing the theme. And that narrows down the available list considerably. With WordPress, there are two options. One is what's called self-hosted, and the other hosting option would be through WordPress.com. With the self-hosted WordPress website, you would sign up with a company like GoDaddy or DreamHost or many others, and you would kind of manage your own WordPress installation. There might be some automation to getting it set up, but you'd be responsible for paying for the hosting and keeping on top of security, updating the version of WordPress and updating your themes to keep it all secure. But if you get hosting through WordPress.com, you will have sort of a managed hosting solution where you don't need to be as attentive to updating your plugins and updating the WordPress software, because WordPress.com does that for you. And that's a big advantage. Also, if you were to go with self-hosting, within the self-hosting lineup of options, you would have either a shared hosting package with a very simple WordPress installation that might not be optimized for speed, or you could do a self-hosted managed WordPress hosting package, which is more expensive. So that's kind of the effort by some hosting companies to mimic what WordPress.com offers, these host-managed WordPress installations. They're a lot easier to set up. There's a lot more automation in terms of keeping the WordPress updated and the plugins updated. And primarily, though, it's the performance gain of having some special features in place and functions in place that allow the site to load much faster for site visitors and to be able to handle a larger number of site visitors. Well, up to this point, we've talked about WordPress and we've talked about the Wix and Weebly approach. With WordPress, unless you get a nicer theme like Divi, you'll be going into the WordPress management dashboard, where you will go to separate areas to find, create, and edit posts, or to find, create, and edit pages, and a separate area where you'll go to manage the menus at the top of the page. So you won't be directly interacting with your page. You'll be going into the dashboard to find the different areas in the control center where you make those adjustments. For some people, that seems confusing, and they wonder, why can't I just edit the website like I would edit a Word document? There's a third option that I'm not going to spend a lot of time on because I feel it's too restrictive, but that would be what's referred to as website builders that use templates. And with a website builder, once you choose a template, it can be difficult to completely change the content design of your site without starting over again. You may be restricted within a certain theme category. Maybe you can change some colors, but you can't just completely overhaul your site. And if you go from one website hosting company to another, it can be very difficult to get your site migrated over. If it's just 5 pages with some pictures on each page, you can copy and paste that, right? But if it's a sizable website with hundreds of posts and lots of complex page layout, then you'd be having a difficult time getting it from one company to another. And that's why the further you go down this path of creating a website, the more you get a little bit sort of locked into the website platform that you're using and the hosting company you're using, because changing this can get complicated the more involved the website is. I use GoDaddy and DreamHost as examples of website hosting companies because they are at opposite ends of the spectrum in terms of services that are offered and the complexity of management modules and things like that. So GoDaddy is a huge company with many clients. They have all kinds of services, including some marketing services you can pay for, all within your account, and lots of different pages you can end up on for managing your website and your account. With DreamHost, if you want just a basic website and not a lot of extra bells and whistles added on, then DreamHost gives you basically a primary main page where you see all of your domain names are accessible, hosting packages, emails, etc. And it's quite simple, but doesn't have all the features that GoDaddy would. And there are many other examples of hosting companies like GoDaddy or like DreamHost that offer lots of features or the minimalist approach. And the ones that offer the minimalist approach are generally favored by tech-savvy web designers who want inexpensive hosting, and they plan to do most of the work themselves and don't need a lot of support in the process. As far as cost for website hosting, you want to be thinking about that ahead of time and anticipate if this is just going to be a hobby website or one that's not generating a lot of revenue for you, you probably don't want to end up spending a lot of money with the cost of maintaining the hosting. And so as you're picking features, you'll want to be careful not to end up with $30, $50 a month or something in regular costs for maintaining your site. At the low end of cost would be getting a website hosted with WordPress.com and paying about $60 or so annually for the hosting. And that would be a great choice for somebody that just wants to have a presence on the web, to be discoverable, and not have a lot of expense. WordPress.com offers more expensive hosting options that include more storage and more features and functions that can cost up to $300 a year instead of $60 a year. So there is room to grow if you need that, but once you go further down that path with WordPress.com hosting, you'll find it may be a little bit difficult to switch to a regular hosting company from WordPress.com. If you plan to upload lots of files and videos and pictures or audio to your website, you may want to just go directly to a hosting company like DreamHost, because you can get the equivalent capacity that's offered by WordPress.com for perhaps $150 a year instead of $300 a year. And something that's available with hosting companies is the ability to have what's called add-on domains. So you can buy extra domain names and have websites bundled in with your current hosting package. So instead of spending $150 per year for a single website, you can have a dozen websites for $150 a year. So that's a nice option for somebody that wants to have multiple websites for marketing purposes or to help out friends or someone else that wants to have a website. They can launch the site and charge them nothing or just charge them a nominal fee for sharing their hosting. It's a good choice for people that are not going to have 10,000 visitors a day to their website. Because it's shared hosting, the performance and some limitations may restrict the effective flow of visitors to the site if they're too many. But you get the idea that if you're having a single website and you want speed and simplicity and low cost, WordPress.com might be a good choice. If you're going to have multiple websites, you probably want to start looking at a website hosting company like GoDaddy or DreamHost. A very important thing to make note of is that it's easy to accidentally sign up for multiple hosting plans if you have several websites. For example, if you're on the GoDaddy website or talking to one of their salespeople, they might say, okay, well, let's see, you have three websites, so we're going to charge you $300 a year for each website. That's, you know, plus these other add-ons, it's going to be $1,000. That's can happen very easily. So $1,000 a year for three websites. If you tell the salesperson or poke around on their website enough and explain, you know, what you want is shared hosting with add-on domains, then suddenly what was going to be $1,000 a year is going to be more like $150 a year. I'm not going to get into the details right now of all these different add-ons, like getting an SSL for HTTPS is like another $80 a year, and extra email accounts, Microsoft Office. They're going to try to sell you all kinds of things, that most of which you're going to want to avoid. So that'll be for another episode. But what I'll say is your cost for a basic website with WordPress should be like $150 a year. And if at some point you decide to go with managed hosting or optimized WordPress hosting, that could be $20 to $30 a month instead of the $150 a year. So to recap, we talked a little bit about the first step, which is finding your name that you're going to use, and the benefit of having perhaps several websites so that you can have a website that's yourname.com and a website that's yourbusinessname.com and a website that is some search phrase that somebody might use, .com. And in that approach, you would want to choose one of the websites to be the one that you push forward, that you spend the most time on. So instead of being a simple 5-page website, that one you may want to put all your posts on, but at least have a presence for these others. So that was naming. And design, my preference is to use WordPress, because even at its most simple level, just using WordPress itself with some included free WordPress theme, if what you're trying to convey are documents and articles and some photos, that can more than adequately be done that way. And most website visitors are not doing what you're doing, sitting around at your computer, spending hours looking at how the page appears. They're going to be on a phone. They're not even going to see the website that you're designing because it won't fit on their phone. They just want to read what the text is on the page. And they might even switch into reader view. So all that time and energy and money you spent designing a fancy website immediately disappears because they tap on what's called reader view that strips out all of that stuff and shows them just the words on the page. So keep that in mind before you spend too much time wringing your hands over getting just the right look and feel for your site, because from one computer display to another, from one browser to another, from one operating system to another, from a desktop to a laptop to a tablet to a smartphone, you think you have a website, but what you really have are dozens of websites in terms of how it looks on all of these different platforms. So the best you can hope for is an attractive site that's easy to navigate, easy to read, easy to get to the information. And if you're hoping for some outcomes, like selling a book or getting people to attend an event or whatever, you want the site to be as simple as possible to get the person to that goal. And if it's informing people, then provide the information without a lot of complexity. Well, I hope that this information has been helpful, even if not to solve problems, to at least provide you with some thought-provoking questions to explore to get to the right answers for the project that you're taking on. I know that web design is a very user-specific and end-goal-specific process. So for each person, you'll definitely want to probably find a mentor or somebody to work with to bounce ideas off of. And that's definitely something I'd recommend. But otherwise, if you have questions and want me to go deeper into some of these topics, I'd be happy to cover anything like that on a future podcast. And even if it's specific to an industry, I'd be happy to essentially provide a podcast that is a consultation that's industry specific about setting up a website for you. For those who are interested and willing to do so, I've considered also having consultations, let's say over the phone or in person as that becomes available, and then having the consultation and the question and answer become a podcast that people can listen to and learn from. So if you're interested in doing something like that, feel free to reach out, let me know, and we can arrange that. So essentially, it would be a free consultation for you and more useful and helpful content for the podcast. Thanks for taking time to listen to this episode of the Walk and Talk podcast. I look forward to sharing more with you again soon. Take care.